Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a One Artist Wednesday edition of the Rodcast. That's when my co-host, the Idillionaire Patrick Davis, that's when he plays some jams from a certain band, artist, or group. He goes deep down the rabbit hole of one specific artist, group, or band, and they become the featured artist of One Artist Wednesday. And today, it is The Cult, but not only because he likes The Cult, but it is a bit of a jab at Aggies. There's a lot of Longhorn fans out there who mockingly joke that the Aggies are a bit of a cult. And so we're playing that cult, rekindling that rivalry with the Aggies coming up this weekend. So my man Patrick, it has a bit of a double meaning for the One Artist Wednesday. So we appreciate that. Also, we appreciate Patrick coming up with the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day. That is already posted for you at The Horn ATX on X. Patrick, what is the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day?
Big Fat Poll of the Day today: who will be the MVP for Texas against A&M? We gave you a couple options. Quinn Ewers, Trey Wisner, Anthony Hill, and Jahdae Barron are the ones we gave you. If you want to throw another one in there, feel free to do so. Right now, Anthony Hill leading the way at 48%. Quinn Ewers with 28%, 16% for Trey Wisner, and 8% for Jahdae Barron.
Yeah, it should be Quinn, but I don't know about Quinn's, Quinn's ankle and how much that's going to limit him. If it does indeed limit Quinn in that game, then, I don't know if it will be the legacy game that I expect it to be. But this is an opportunity to be a legacy game for Quinn. And he's been good in those legacy games, right? It's the Bama game, Michigan game, Oklahoma, of course. Your rivalry games are big legacy games for him. So this is one way for Quinn to, cement his status, or another way for him to cement his status and legacy with Longhorn.
And I mean, it depends kind of on that ankle, and we'll see how he looks and how he feels. But he was playing really well in that game. I thought he was. Yeah. I thought that was one of his better games, especially in the second half of the season that he had had. I thought he was playing really, really well, and then the injury happened, and he couldn't move anymore. And it took away, and he just couldn't plant his feet the right way. So so much what we talk about at Quinn is footwork and making sure his footwork's right. And if you take an ankle injury, your footwork's going to go downhill pretty quick.
Yep. I agree with that. Good point.
But I think that he was having one of his best games up until that injury. And so if you can get back and get back a little bit to what he was doing in that game, the things that Sark was drawing up for him that worked really well, against a good defense in Kentucky, if he can go back and do that and be that guy, then he'll get his flowers afterwards.
Yeah, no, I agree with you about how well he was playing. Though, I remember saying that too at we were doing the on Texas in game live watch, and I said I think it's one of Quinn's better halves of football that I've seen him play all year. He was 17 of 26 at that time, which was, that was 65% or whatever that is, 177 yards. He had two touchdowns on the day. Texas was 50% conversion rate on third downs. Combined fourth down on money downs, they were 50% conversion rate on money downs, averaging over 6 yards per play. Dominating time possession.
Making good decisions. Passes. Sark was calling up stuff that got him the ball where it needed to be. I think it helped him to focus on one receiver a little bit more in Matthew Golden early, where it took away a little bit more of the decision-making and said, if Golden's got it, go Golden. Just go to him.
Yeah.
And he went
and
to
they didn't
early.
Have their full complement of receivers, to your point. Bond and Moore were hurt.
Yeah, both of them were banged up. That play, the touchdown to Moore or to Helm when he cut across and started to move but kept his eyes downfield and found Gunnar Helm, that right there is a big play that I don't know if Quinn hits every week this season. Yep, I think some weeks he panics a little bit more and tries to make something happen in the pocket or rolls and tries to run and does. But to move out, keep his eyes downfield and make that throw and still hit it, all those pieces, I thought he was playing really, really well. So if you put that Quinn out there before the ankle injury and he can play like that again, that's a big, big game for Quinn against Staggies.
Nope, I totally agree with you. That's the unfortunate part is that I think he was starting to find his groove again as a player.
Exactly.
It takes Quinn a couple of games usually when to get in his groove once he comes back from the injury or to start the season, and I think he was starting to hit it, and now you have the ankle injury to deal with. So and that game, I was a little surprised. They came out running the football even before the injury. They were still running the football. Your early game, early down pass rate was below 60%. in my opinion, if you go look at it. I think it was probably hovering like right below 60%. Usually Sark is above 60% early game, early down pass. I think he knew they were having some success running the football, and Sark wanted to cultivate that. And thank God he did, because later on in the game, you need it. All you had left was the running game to rely on. All right, so hopefully Quinn, if he comes out in this game, hopefully Quinn is healthy enough to be able to execute the offense. If not, I can see them starting to run the ball earlier than expected, just to see if they can find some creases in this Aggie rush defense. And I think there are some creases. We'll talk about that. There are some creases in this Aggie rush defense. We'll go behind the burn orange curtain and discuss that. Continue to talk Texas, Texas A&M. We'll also dive into the national award winners. At least the national award finalists, who also have been announced. That was announced yesterday. Two Longhorns find themselves on that finalist list for the national awards. Also, we'll get into the college football playoff. The latest rankings came out last night. We'll talk about where the Longhorns are ranked there. Not a lot of mystery, and for Longhorn fans, pretty much their interest in the college football playoff rankings is has waned, because the drama, there's no drama, because the belief is that if Texas, even if they lose to the Aggies, they will not lose to the Aggies. But even if they do, Longhorns are still going to be in the college football playoff. All right, so we'll discuss that. We'll give you that. But when we come back, let's get to the Horn headlines. Then we'll come back and discuss the national award finalists. Two Longhorns getting some love there. Then we'll also dive into the college football playoff rankings. But first, let's get educated, updated, and informed with all the top stories of the day with Patrick Davis and the Horn headlines.
All right, your Horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the NBA, the Rockets beat the Timberwolves 117-111 last night, pushing their cup play record to 3-0. Fred VanVleet had 27 points and 11 assists, and Alperen Şengün added a triple-double. The Spurs won their fourth straight, 128-115 over the Jazz, with Victor Wembanyama putting up 34 points in the game. Tonight, the Spurs are back in action against the Lakers. The Mavericks welcome Jalen Brunson and the Knicks, and the Rockets take on the struggling 76ers. In college basketball, number one Kansas held on 75-72 to hand number 11 Duke their second loss of the season. Unranked Colorado handed number two UConn their second straight loss in a row, 73-72. And number 20 Texas A&M lost their second game of the season to an unranked Oregon, 80-70. In college football, the latest playoff rankings were released, with Texas remaining at number 3. Indiana dropped to number 10, and Arizona State now sneaks in as the final team. Clemson, Alabama, and Ole Miss are on the outside looking in at 12, 13, and 14, respectively. And that is your Horn Headlines.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Not sure what's worse right now, my Cowboys or our choices for politicians lately. But nothing would be worse than missing out on end-of-year deals on Steel, Hustler, Gravely, and Toro mowers and lawn equipment this month at Top Gun. TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
All right. Thank you, Patrick, for the Horn headlines. Appreciate that. Okay, let's dive into the college football playoff rankings first. Then we'll get into the finalists who were announced as national award finalists on the Longhorns. But college football playoff rankings, they came out last night. As it stands, Oregon at number 1, Ohio State at 2, Texas at number 3, Penn State at number 4, Notre Dame now at number 5, Miami at 6, Georgia 7, Tennessee 8, SMU 9, Indiana 10, Boise State at 11, Clemson 12. They got Bama as the first one out at 13, Ole Miss as the second out at 14. If you look at the bracket, the current bracket, and where the teams are seated, four teams will get the first round bye. Those teams, number 1, Oregon, number 2, Texas, number 3, Miami, and number 4, Boise State. Based on these projections. And then your first round games would be as follows: 5 versus 12. That's Ohio State at 5 versus Arizona State at 12. The 6-11 matchup would be Penn State at 6, Indiana at 11. Your 7-10 matchup, Notre Dame versus SMU. Notre Dame is 7, SMU 10. And your 8-9 matchup would be Georgia at 8 versus Tennessee at number 9. And I got to tell you, man, that Ohio State path to the Coswell playoff, or at least to the championship, would be pretty sweet. They'd get to, if this seeding held, they'd get Arizona State at 12 and then get Boise State at 4. Now, nobody in this playoff is an easy win, but man, if you're Ohio State, man, that's probably as favorable as you can get, going up against the Big 12 representative, which we all agree, weakest of the Power 4 conferences, and then going up against a group of 6. The group of six representative too?
Yeah, that's come on.
I want Texas to have that seat.
Come
I'll take
on
that
now.
Seat.
Come on.
Which was better, the bye or that?
The bye is better because you're beat up. But the bye is better because anything can happen in college football. But at the same part, come on, Ohio State. People giving us crap. You don't play anybody either, Ohio State.
Yeah, played Oregon and lost and beat the hell out of Indiana, who hadn't played anybody either. So
yeah,
yeah.
No, was there non-con? I feel like they had a non-con game that was okay.
Oh, I think you're right about that. Actually, well, listen, Texas is nobody to talk because Texas' strength schedule, I'll admit, is pretty damn weak. But at this point, 11 games in, the weakness of the schedule and strength schedule doesn't matter, in my opinion. If you are a 10-1 team, if you won 10 games through 11 games, you've proven all you need to prove at this point. And that's why I think the committee, or at least not the committee, but everybody who are projecting and prognosticating what the committee is going to decide, already saying Texas is in. No matter what happens, they can lose to A&M. They can lose to the two good teams they actually play on the damn schedule.
Yeah. All right, so
Georgia and A&M, and they'll still get in. Because at this point, 10 wins through 10 to 11 games matters more than your strength of schedule.
Ohio State did not play anybody non-conference. They played Akron,
Western Michigan. But that Oregon game was just early.
That Oregon game was in the middle, and then they beat Penn State as well.
Yeah, that Penn State. Yeah, Penn State win.
But Penn State also hasn't played many people. Like, really, no one. The Big Ten is very boom or bust. I saw a thing talking about playoff or bowl game eligible teams where Texas is actually really high up on that list of teams in the top 25, where it's teams that they played that are bowl eligible right now. Yeah, and that's where the Big Ten starts to lose a lot of ground, is that they're played a lot of teams that were not even, that are just kind of really not good teams.
This reminds me of just like, it reminds me of. Like the election season when all these stats come out,
exactly.
Polls and stuff, and it's like, well, so both sides have stats that make them look good.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
it's like, oh, so this demographic is voting this way, and you say this demographic is voting that way.
So the economy is awful, but also great. Okay, I can't figure it out. I don't know what's happening.
It was. No, that's right. That's basically, Joe Biden and Kamala are claiming, oh, no, the economy is great. Look at all these stats that tell you the economy is better than it's been in decades. And people are like, inflation? I still got to pay too much for eggs and groceries, so I don't know about them stats. What about the stats I got? And then, so it's just everybody's got their stats, man.
Yep.
The stats
are like the exactly keys. What we
they
are
can
going
tell you
through.
A lot, but not everything.
That is exactly what we're going through in the college, because everyone will sit there and go, well, my three-loss team is better than your one-loss team because.
Look at my three losses and your one loss. And it's like, okay, yeah, I get it.
Look at my wins. Where's your big win? You're like, okay, but what about your losses? I don't look at my losses.
They're like, exactly. What about your record on the border? Don't look at that. Just look at these stats. Don't look at this. That's what all the political allegiances and all of the major campaigns, they want you to look at. They're trying to get you to look at one thing and not pay attention to the other thing. Because both sides, trust me, got stuff you can criticize. But to your point, I believe it was Blake Monroe. Shout out to Blake Monroe, who I believe had those stats you're talking about the bowl games. But here it is. About the bowl teams, that they had beaten. Texas is the only SEC team to have 5-plus wins against bowl-eligible teams. The next closest is Alabama with 4, Georgia, Ole Miss, and A&M and South Carolina all have 4, and Missouri has 3. So, and if you look at – so that is – to me, that's an impressive stat. If you look at margin of victory versus bowl-eligible teams, bowl-eligible Power 4 teams. Oregon beating those teams by 17 points. Texas is second at 13.3 margin of victory versus bowl-eligible teams. Texas is 5-1 against those teams, and, Oregon's 3-0. Ole Miss was 4-2. And they were beating them by an average margin of victory of 12.7. You can make these stats kind of say whatever you want to about how your team performed. Like I said, I think for Texas, the most important thing is at this point in the season, it ain't got to be pretty. You just got to win. That's the best thing about this part of the season. We're done with the beauty contest. Most of the teams are – it's already decided pretty much who's going to be. Now, there could be some big shakeup, but for Texas, Texas is in. Texas is in. And if you want the rematch with Georgia, you got to beat the Aggies to get that. That's the only way you get your rematch with Georgia, to be able to to be able to get, you know, to avenge your only loss on the season, which would be also really cool to be able to avenge the only loss on the season. How often do you get that chance? Doesn't really happen very often. So there you go. I'm with you. Stats can say anything.
Yeah, you can make it.
At this point, I don't really care.
No, and it is. It's get in. Yeah, it's when you say the stuff of, yeah, when you look at it and you go, oh, State's going to get this. Now, also, I don't know if I've ever rooted for Michigan as much as I'll be rooting for them in this game, because that would be hilarious if Michigan could knock up Ohio State.
Ohio State, yeah.
Because Ryan Day
would be fired.
Yeah, right. That's the one for Ryan Day where he's just like, oh, how do you lose to Michigan again? You lost to Oregon. You lost.
Yeah.
You barely beat Penn State, but everybody, I mean, James Franklin can't win a big game, so.
No, he would be. Ryan Day would be done. I hate to say it because it sounds ridiculous because he's one of the best coaches in the country, but I do believe he'd be on a very hot seat, if not out, if he can't beat this Michigan team. This Michigan team.
Yeah.
He'd be different if it was another Michigan team that's, you know, going to make the college football playoff and,
yeah,
you know, they're a good Michigan team. This is not even a good Michigan team.
No, this is a 6-5 Michigan team.
This is an average Michigan team, as average as it gets. And Ohio State, all the money they spent on this roster?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, and you lose to Michigan again without Jim Harbaugh?
Come on, go blue. Let's go.
Ooh. Oh, man. Yeah, that's so ugly. I don't even want to see how it looks. Matter of fact, I got some audio of Ryan Day talking about how bad it is to lose to Michigan and how it hurts. And it's troubling how much it hurts him to lose to Michigan. So we'll play that audio a little bit later on. All right, let's get to the National Award finalists who were announced. There were two Longhorns, and congratulations are in order for these two Longhorns who are getting love as the best, or two of the best at their position. Jahdae Barron is a Thorpe Award finalist. And he is a Thorpe Award finalist with Malachi Starks, his senior safety out of Georgia, and Caleb Downs, a sophomore safety, speaking of Ohio State. And Kelvin Banks makes it as a finalist for the Outland Trophy. Matter of fact, you can bring the Outland to Texas in back-to-back years because Devondre Sweat, right, won the Outland Trophy. So that would be pretty cool. How often does that happen? The Outland, get a national award back-to-back at the same school but with different players.
I mean, it happens. I know that when I was looking at the Butkus Award, I think it's happened a couple times there where somebody's won it back-to-back years at the same school, so I know that there's a few times it's happened, but I'll see if I can find out how many times it's happened.
No, it makes sense because that's how programs get Texas didn't do it. They do it with A. Ross and Huff Daddy.
With
Huff Daddy and A. Ross, they might have done it, actually. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I got to look at when A. Ross won. But I remember Huff Daddy running. I know A. Ross ran it within like a couple of years of that.
Let's see.
It was really close together, Thorpe and A. Ross. If it wasn't back-to-back, then it was like
back-to-back.
The year
after. 05 and 06.
Okay.
You nailed that one. 05 and 06. Huff in 05, Aaron Ross in 06.
Yeah. That's how you get the reputation for being DBU or running back U,
yep,
or, you know, tight end, you, whatever it is, you go back to back, and then you go, damn, two different players back to back, being the best players at their respective positions in the country. Hard to say that, right?
And then LSU did it a few years later.
Wide receiver?
No, at the Thorpe Award.
At DB?
When they were starting to kill it at DB.
Okay.
They had Patrick Peterson in 2010, Maurice Claiborne in 2011.
Okay, yeah, DB, yeah, you're right. It could be considered DBU, too. Yeah, you're right. I'm sure it happens a little bit more than we realize at those specific positions. That's interesting, though. Okay, let's get to I want to talk about Jahdae Barron and compare him really quickly, then we'll get to the Kelvin Banks one. Now, if you were just doing statistical comparison between Jahdae Barron and the other finalists, which are Malachi Starks, who we've seen in person, got a chance to see him in the Georgia game. If you're looking at Malachi Starks, or if you're looking at Caleb Downs, who's a really good player. I was a big fan of him. I transferred from Alabama, but definitely one of the best safeties in the country. But if you're looking at the statistical comparison between the two, between the three, I think Jahdae Barron should be, based on this, he should be the front runner to win it. All right, now, shout out to my man C.J. Vogel over at Owen Texas Football. who broke this down and had a kind of a great breakdown, basically by statistically by each player and how they compare to each other. So here is the stats and how the three players compare. So you look at tackles, and now keep in mind, Jadae Barron is a corner, and these are the two safeties. Jadae Barron, he had 41 tackles. That's the second most among this group. Caleb Downs had 50, so he had more. Solo tackles, he had 27. That is the second most among these finalists. Caleb Downs had 29, so Caleb Downs, he has the advantage there in tackles and solo tackles. Look at tackles for loss. Caleb Downs has 6.5. And Jadae Barron has 2. So Jadae Barron has the fewest tackles for loss among this group. Malachi Starks has 4. If you look at passes broken up, this is where the coverage stats come into play. Jadae Barron has 8. Malachi Starks has 2. And Caleb Downs has 3. So Jadae Barron has more PBUs than the other two finalists combined. His completion percentage allowed is 57%, compared to, that is the best completion percentage allowed, or the lowest, I should say, compared to Malachi Starks at 61% and Caleb Downs at 70%. Touchdowns allowed in coverage, 0 touchdowns allowed in coverage for Jadae Barron. Caleb Downs is also allowed 0 touchdowns in coverage. Malachi Starks is allowed a touchdown in coverage. And if you look at coverage yards allowed overall, Jadae Barron has allowed the second fewest. Malachi Starks has allowed the most, 241, 200 by Jadae Barron, and 123, by Caleb Downs. So it's pretty, to me, I think it's pretty obvious statistically. Now, I'm sure they're going on film and some other things, but statistically, Jadae Barron has made more splash plays in the passing game. And I like that he's made big plays on a big stage. Biggest game of the season for Texas, probably that Texas-Georgia game. That was their most watched game of the season, and Jadae Barron had 2 picks in that game. He's also got some highlight reel plays from that game versus Arkansas, from that game versus Colorado State early on, that I'm sure were played during, the review of the Texas game, when they recap the Texas game, and that's good. And you think, why does that matter? Well, you need voters around the country who are not watching every Texas game. I assure you, they're not. They're watching the big games, but they're not watching every Texas game. And unless you've had big plays in those games, and Jadae Barron has, he had a fumble recovery in the Michigan game. He had 2 interceptions in the Georgia game. And in, I'm sure, the big game, I don't know if you can count the other as a big game. Texas OU is a big game, but OU wasn't really good. My point is, if they're mentioning you on these highlights when all of these voters around the country are watching the recaps of these games on SportsCenter or whatever, and they mention, oh, Jadae Barron with another interception, it does play a role in you and them becoming familiar with you. And it influences their vote. There's no doubt about that. And Jadae Barron has some of that. So I think Jadae's going to win it. Now, the truth is, I do think somebody was snubbed. It should be Jadae Barron versus Travis Hunter, and then one of those other players, maybe Caleb Downs or maybe Malachi Starks. But the fact that Travis Hunter didn't make it at all as a finalist, that's crazy. And he's got 3 interceptions on the season. He's got 1 forced fumble. He's got a pass. He's got 9 pass deflections on the season. I think Travis Hunter is one of the best DBs in the country. And the crazy thing is, he's going to be drafted before any defensive back in the country is drafted. Before any DB is drafted, he's going to be drafted. So NFL scouts and GMs are going to view him as the best defensive back in college football. And yet, he's not even a finalist for the Thorpe Award given out annually to the best defensive back in college football. That's a travesty. No pun intended there. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So we'll hear from Deion talking about it a little bit later. But Patrick, I think he probably can win the Heisman, and maybe that's why. Maybe they felt like he was on too many award finalist lists or semifinalist lists, because I think he's on like 4 or 5 of them.
That's not a reason to not make him a finalist.
I'm trying to psychoanalyze and rationalize.
Charles Woodson won the Heisman. Charles Woodson won the Thorpe.
Yeah.
Champ Bailey played both ways. He was a finalist. I'm just saying, he has to win it. You don't have to give it to him, but you need to put him as a finalist, because otherwise it's, you're the best DB other than Travis Hunter.
Pretty much.
Is what they're telling you, because we took him out because he was too good at football, so we took him out of the running. Is what you're kind of saying when you don't have him in there, which I think Jahdae Barron could beat him. I think Jahdae Barron is a better DB than Travis Hunter. So you don't need to take him out in that conversation.
No. Yeah.
So that's why I prefer to have him in there, because I prefer to beat the best.
I agree. I think you just, in a way, you lost credibility. Like, you discredited the entire award because you didn't have who a lot of people believe, NFL scouts, a lot of great football minds believe, oh, that's one of the best DBs in the country, if not the best DB. And now you're not a finalist for the award?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a dang coaching mistake. Can we hear from Deion real quick? We have this Deion audio. I'm sorry to rush that on you. I forgot to get you ready. Deion went off. I mean, he didn't go off. He wasn't angry, but he said some things directed at the Thorpe Award committee. and this is a guy that won the Thorpe. It is universally recognized as one of the greatest DBs to ever play the game at the college or the pro level. Listen to what Deion had to say about the snub of Travis Hunter.
Something that just transpired and they brought to my attention today, that Travis is a finalist for the Walter Camp Player of the Year, Maxwell Player of the Year, Bednarik Defense Player of the Year, Blitnikoff Best Receiver, regardless of position, and was snubbed by the Thorpe. How? How is Travis Hunter snubbed by the Jim Thorpe Award? You can have my award. You can have it back. Matter of fact, I'm going to give him mine. I ain't using it. It's just sitting up there collecting dust. So Travis could have my Thorpe Award, because if this ain't the most idiotic thing in college football, that he's not a finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, and he is, I would say arguably, but it's, I don't think it's really an argument about this young man being the best defensive back in college football. I ain't saying nothing about the receiver part of it. I'm just talking about defensive back. He rarely gets thrown at. He's won a game for tackling for us, and he's always on point. So if you bring up the statistics, I don't know how in the world is Travis Hunter not a finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award. They just pretty much messed up all the integrity of the award, and he could have mine. Whoever's voting down there, who's ever bringing it home, thank you, because I don't even want mine now. God bless you.
I grew up wanting to win the Thorpe Award. I want to be the best defensive back in the country. I agree with the man. I mean, you just, now you've lost all credibility. And you've lost, you know, the integrity of the award, I think, has been, for this season, I do believe has been, I think it's out the window. I think because it's an obvious one, though. It's not.
Yeah,
like,
no, I won't say it's out debatable. The window, but I will say it is. It takes a hit. It takes a hit for sure.
I think it's out the window. You're not even a finalist. You don't even have one of the best players position.
Oh, I agree. I agree with that.
I think it goes back to what we said. Like, yes, I think Jahdae Barron is definitely worthy of it, and it should win the award. I'm picking him a little biased, but I do think he's been the best DB in the country. I haven't watched every game of Travis Hunter's like I have for Jahdae Barron, but dude, to not even have him as a finalist, that to me, that means like you purposefully engineered and concocted this group of finalists. You didn't allow it to, and I don't know how the vote took place, but it seems to me this has to be an agenda.
Yeah, no,
I don't know how many voters there are, but it seems to me you got to have an agenda to not have Travis Hunter, who is right now arguably the most recognizable skilled player in college football.
I would also have to go back and look at finalists year to year and see if it is you're not allowed to be on with three losses or something to that weird effect where they don't like it, or your defense has to be ranked something. If there's some criteria in their head that Colorado didn't meet, not Travis Hunter, but Colorado didn't meet, and that eliminated him, because if you look at the teams that are represented in the Thorpe finalists, they're all elite teams. They're all top teams.
Elite so, defenses too. I agree with that.
And so I don't know. That would be my only reasoning that I could think of that is justifiable. And even that I don't like. But I could say, no, in our criteria, it says, you know, we're looking at elite defenses and the best DBs on elite defenses. That's who we want to pick from. And Colorado's not an elite defense. And Colorado's not an elite team, so we're not going
to
pick.
Then change the award.
I agree. I agree with you.
Change the parameters of it. It doesn't go to the best defensive back in the country. Then
no, I agree.
It goes to the best DB on the best defense on the best team.
Yeah,
which is what the Heisman has become.
Yeah, that's what the Heisman is. That's what the MVP is. That's what most of these awards are. So I get it. I'm just – that would be my guess of why it isn't. So I think it takes a hit, but I won't say it ruins it because I don't want to do that to the kids who win it because they had no reason to not – they whoever wins it did not have any say in Travis Hunter not being there. So I'd like to not go to that person and say, hey, you want a fake award, have fun, take your plastic trophy and go home. I think that's a bit over the top of it, even though, because they had nothing to do with it, and they had a great season. So I'll give it some credibility still. That it's still a big award.
No,
but I'm with you that
it's great for whoever wins it. But you definitely, in my opinion, you lost some credibility.
I think you lost, 100%. You lost some. Yeah, I agree. I think you lost a lot of credibility. I won't say it's all out the window. That's what I'm saying.
I said I would. I'm a DB. I want to win that award. I think you lost. I think it's all out. Because I think we haven't had a player like this in the history of college football. Yep. It'd be different if it's a guy that we had seen before. This type of game. We've never, ever seen a player like Travis Hunter. Yeah. Ever. Never, ever will see another player like Travis Hunter. And he plays that position, a defensive back, and you are deciding that a once-in-a-generational player isn't good enough to be a finalist for the Thorpe Award, even though he plays defensive back. And everybody agrees, once-in-generational player, probably going to be a top-five pick. Scouts and GM thinks he's the best player. And it'd be different if he didn't have the stats to back it up. He's got the stats to back it up, too.
I agree.
I don't understand. I don't get it.
No, I think they should definitely get out in front of it and say,
and by the way, they gave it to, if you go look at the Thorpe Award, so in 2012, Jonathan Banks won it. Mississippi State was an 8-win team.
Yeah, then I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
They were an 8-win team. Their defense was 34th in the country. I mean, it was an elite defense. I guarantee I can find a ton of those examples.
No, I bet you could, everywhere. And that's what I'm saying. I'm just trying to find
Louisville in 2014. I know these aren't great teams. You know what I mean? Like they're not all these players are on great teams. I agree. I don't understand what happened. That's crazy.
Was that the Louisville team with Lamar Jackson though?
I don't know. I got to go look and see. It could be. That could be one of his. But I'm just saying. They're not giving it necessarily to always to elite teams.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you that it takes a big hit. I'll tell you honestly, I could take a big grain of salt with all these awards. I think most of the voters for these awards are underqualified to do it. So I think most awards take a giant hit because they only pick guys that play on ABC and they don't pick guys that play on ESPN2, and there's probably a lot of great players they never watch. I can say that for most awards. I think that this one, it's a massive oversight. It'll take a hit of credibility. They all have a hit of credibility with me anyway. This one, I won't take it away, though, because I'm not going to tell whoever wins that award, hey, man, you won the Thorpe. Might as well throw it in the trash. It's worthless.
No, you don't. No, it's not their fault. But
exactly. Like I said, but that's when you say it has no credibility. That's what you're saying. You're saying whoever wins this, you won a fake award. Sorry. Sorry that they screwed it up for you. You won a fake award this year.
But it's hard to justify that you are the real winner when one of the worthiest candidates is not even there. That would indicate or imply they concocted and fixed it.
Yeah, it would.
And if they fixed it, the fix is in. It's fake. That's what the fix is about. It's a fix. It's fake. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like you're losing all credibility here because as we discuss this, I'm convincing myself more and more the fix was in. How was this not a fix? How did you guys come to this conclusion that the best overall talent overall in college football who played defensive back is not worthy of being a finalist? That's why he's on like 6 finalist lists because everybody had the same conversation we're having right now. I said, guys, we got to put him on there. He's like a once-in-generation. He is Jim Thorpe. He is Jim Thorpe. This is the guy. You've been waiting on Jim Thorpe? It's him. What the hell you been waiting on? What are we doing? Crazy. All right, you know what? Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll get into the conversation about Texas Tech and preview the matchup. Hear from Steve Sarkisian as well. All that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis and Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babies coming back on the horn.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Let's talk about Texas A&M a little bit. One matchup that may determine actually this game between Texas Tech A&M is the Texas offensive line versus the A&M front. The A&M front, Nick Skirton, Shamar Stewart, Shamar Turner, I mean, those guys are known as, you know, some of those guys are going to play on Sundays. Those are NFL caliber players. Shamar Stewart and Nick Skirton will be going up against Kelvin Banks and Cam Williams. I mean, that'll be a hell of a matchup to watch. Those two bookend defensive ends versus the two bookend tackles for the Longhorns there. And the Aggies, I point this out, have 195 pressures. That's the top 20 number for them, so they can create pressure. They want to create havoc. If you go look at their tackles for loss, I mean, that's actually one of the things that they do really well is they create havoc plays. They have 78 tackles for loss. That's a top 20 number. And they have 195 pressure. So they're top 20 in creating pressure and top 20 at creating negative plays and tackles for loss. And that's for Texas, it's going to be big. They stay out of third and long situations against this Aggie front. So you don't have to really have your tackles exposed on an island. You feel really good about Kelvin Banks, no matter who he's going up against. But Cam Williams, you've seen Cam Williams actually get beat sometimes this season. And I think, you know, that's something that the Aggies can take advantage of if they get Texas in that predictable passing situation. They create these negative plays by doing a lot of stunting, twists and stunts. They play games up front. This actually may work out in Texas' favor. Because they do this on passing downs. They do it on running downs, too. And they're trying to confuse blocking schemes and get a free rusher so that they can make a play in the backfield. And not saying it doesn't work. I just gave you numbers. 78 tackles for loss. But against Auburn and honestly against South Carolina, you know, this strategy of them doing a lot of twists and stunts instead of confusing blocking schemes, I think it oftentimes led to gaps and huge creases. When they were trying to do gap exchanges, essentially is what they call it. When you're exchanging gap responsibility and doing a twist and a stunt. So when they're doing gap exchanges, you can tell at times that, you know, they end up out of position. And against Texas, with the running game that Texas has, which is a outside wide zone running game, we talked about this against Kentucky, the run game concept that worked the most successfully, or at least that was the most effective, was the split wide zone. You had 7 explosive runs of 10-plus yards. 4 of those were the split wide zone. Another one was a wide zone, so 5 of your 7 were a wide zone of some type. And on those wide zones, you're just looking for creases. You got the running back being patient. You got the offensive line's walling off, zone blocking, all right, the play side, and you're just looking for a crease. Now, sometimes the running back ends up cutting it back, but against the Aggies, you can find a lot of creases because they don't play things straight up with straight-up gap integrity. They do a lot of twists and stunts to try to confuse blocking schemes, but all you need is, you know, one defender to get walled off and, you know, the Texas offensive line to create that one little sliver. And we've seen Trey Wiseman do a great job of, boom, hitting it on the run. So that's something to watch. If they're going to do a lot of twists and stunts against Texas, whether it be early downs or passing downs, wouldn't be surprised if Texas is able to pop a few runs with that wide zone. They do really well, at least that they were running really well versus Kentucky. So that's also something to watch. And Texas' run game lately, I mean, last 3 games, Texas is averaging 5 yards per rush. Now, let's flip this, talk about the Aggie run game for a second. The Aggies have actually been struggling a little bit in their run game the last 2 SEC games. Now, the last 3 weeks, and that includes, was it McNeese State or whatever they played, but also South Carolina in that 3 weeks and Auburn in that 3 weeks. They're averaging, they went from 4.6 yards per rush on the season. In the last 3 weeks, 4.1 yards per rush. The running game is starting to it's starting to weaken. That's kind of the best description I can get. Or when they lost Le'Veon Moss, they lost their most dynamic, explosive running back. I mean, he was a beast, averaging over 6 yards per carry. They lost him. Reuben Owens is another running back they lost. They've had some running back injuries, kind of like Texas. And now they don't have that explosive element in the backfield. So against Auburn and South Carolina, they averaged 3.5 yards per design carry for the running backs. 3.5 yards per design carry. I told you in the last 3 weeks, including the McNeese State game, they're averaging 4.1 yards per rush overall. They only forced 4 missed tackles in those 2 games, come on, versus Auburn and South Carolina. You only forced 4 missed tackles, 3.5 yards per design carry, 1.8 yards after contact per carry, and you had 2 explosive runs in those two games from your running backs. The running back, the traditional run game, for some, it's lacking something for. It leaves a lot to be desired, and that seems to be happening as people are. It is the offense remains simplistic because of Marcel Reed, an inexperienced quarterback. So they don't do a lot of checks and audibles at the line of scrimmage. There's not a lot of that, and then their run game is a bit simplistic. It's not very sophisticated. They run zone read. They're going to run the read option, and I think now with teams with really good athletes on the edges, like South Carolina, like Auburn, they, whoever, good run defenses, which Texas has arguably the best defense in the country, run defense is not their elite trait. It's not their calling card, but Texas still has a top 25, top 30 rush defense. So even though it's the weakest part of their defense, it's still no slouch. It's still one of the better rush defenses in the country. And Texas has really good edge defenders and athletic edge defenders, and that's been the key to corralling Texas A&M's running attack, because that's how you, and Anthony Hill, athletic linebackers, that is how you corral the running game, because you also can account for the plus one with the quarterback in the running game. So the way their running game is trending and the way the Texas defense is playing, they're going to have to break tendency somehow offensively. They're going to have to, because otherwise I don't see them marching the length of the field on the Texas defense. Now, Texas defense did give up some explosive plays in the passing game versus Kentucky. They've allowed, 21 explosive, 20-plus yard plays via the pass on the season, and five of those came in the game versus Kentucky. Nobody saw that coming. Maybe that's a way that they're going to move the football. Maybe they'll break tendency, throw the ball early on. I'm not sure, but if this A&M rushing offense, which will look better, it'll look better, I guarantee you, at home in that game versus Texas. But if it's trending the way that it has in their last two SEC games, Texas is going to slap around A&M a little bit in the run game. Yeah. So they got to figure out something a little bit different. All right, we come back. We'll get into Off the Record on the other side. Ooh, this Longhorn's got a new NIL deal. Pretty sweet. Speaking of the run game, we'll get into that. Also, we got my man Nick Shuley coming up in the 9 o'clock to do Set List ATX. All of that and more right here on the broadcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
D.D. Megadoodoo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a break my head comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
Last time for a little Off the Record here, when we hit wacky, crazy stories from the sports world and sometimes beyond the sports world. This is not a wacky, crazy story, just another NIL deal that the Longhorns can promote, that one of their players is a now, yes, Jared Gibson is now endorsing Maserati. He has signed an NIL deal with Maserati Austin.
Hey, man.
It's pretty damn sweet, man. Guys has some ball security issues, still getting a Maserati deal.
Hey.
That's how it's done at Texas, man.
Hey, man, that's how all you right? Don't fumble the bag.
You do not. No, don't fumble the bag. I mean, he's your third running back right now. I mean, he's the future, but he's your third back right now. And you're not necessarily confident in him as a third back because you're not sure about ball security or pass protection. Maserati deal.
That's good to be at Texas.
Hold on. What does Trey Wisner have? Does Trey Wisner have a Maserati deal? Because if not, we need to reevaluate something. What's Trey Wisner's deal? Because he's the one carrying the run game right now.
I don't know. I'm sure he's got something.
It ain't a Maserati deal. What, he's got just a Ford truck?
No, he got something that's reliable. He's got something that's reliable.
It ain't going to break down, huh?
No.
Ford tough.
It gets you from point A to point B reliably.
Yes. Yeah, you don't need all that Maserati, all that kind of stuff. No, that's for Jaden Blue and Jerry Gibson. No, we're talking about reliable, trustworthy, not flashy, not stylish, all substance, baby. Okay, I don't know what Trey Wiseman, if he don't have a deal with a car company, he needs one because it's Trey Day, all right? But I'm happy for Jerry Gibson getting a Maserati deal. It's pretty damn sweet.
I don't know. Trey Wiseman may be waiting to negotiate at the end of the season, too. Maybe. He may be sitting there, I think. So, guys, I can be like, well, here's my evaluation after last year. Where is my evaluation now?
What is Trey Wiseman? What's his classification to?
I think he's his second year. Am I wrong in that?
Right. And he's young. I'm not really sure. That's a good point. I guess, you know, next year CJ Baxter will be back.
Yeah,
I bet they'll go into the transfer portal for a running back too.
Yeah.
And you have the youngster like Christian Clark coming back. I mean, a lot of uncertainty in that running back room. I wonder where he'll be in terms of his status and place in that room next year. I know there'll be a role for him.
There'll be a role, but Sark is going to try and load up in that room after this year.
I know. That's why I almost wonder if – oh, that's interesting. Yeah, if he'll try to, you know, negotiate or – I mean, part of negotiation is you got to have leverage. What's the leverage if you're Trey Wiseman to get the deal that you want? I just played a good season. He's like, well, yeah, but C.J. Bass is coming back. All these other backs coming back. What are you threatening me with leverage-wise?
I don't know. If I was Sark, I'd want to keep the guy that I trust.
I know, but I'm saying, what if Texas wants to play hardball and lowball you?
Hey, our third stringer just got a third stringer who plays like three. Got a Maserati. Got a Maserati deal. I think there's something in the budget for him.
I agree. I'm with you too. What I'm saying, these are negotiations, whether people believe it or not.
No, I'm just saying he was what, four string going into the season.
He was. He didn't have a Maserati deal as a four stringer.
No.
But he doesn't have one now as the top guy. Where's the Maserati deal for Trey Wiseman?
I'm hoping he's got something. I'm hoping he's got something going.
I haven't seen it on my timeline. And I think the whole purpose of these NIL deals is so they can advertise and endorsements. And if I haven't seen it, it's a failure of the strategy to advertise and endorse the product. I saw Jerry Gibson and went, great job. That's advertising. That's how it's supposed to work. Now I'm talking about Maserati on the show. That's what they want. Free mentions. Where is Trey Wiseman's deal? Get it done. Get it done. What are we waiting on here? Get it done. Because I guarantee you next year they're going to try to lowball you. Because they're going to be like, hey, we got the guys coming back in. And then Trey Wiseman's going to have to use leverage. And what's your leverage? What's your leverage as a player? It's transfer portal. That's your leverage, guys. It's always your leverage. That is your leverage. I don't want him to have to use that leverage.
No.
I don't want him to even get there. So give the man a deal now so we won't have to get to that point where he's like, hey, you know what, can I have the Maserati deal? I mean, I'm right now leading you guys in rushing and rushing attempts, and I'm the only one that can hold on to the ball. You don't want the man to go in there and say that. I guess his agent would go in there and say that. But still, the man deserves an NIL deal.
He does.
Maserati or
whatever. He deserves whatever car he wants to get. You find him whatever car he wants.
And I say he might have one, but can we agree that none of us have seen it?
I don't think I've seen it. No,
seen the deal. Yeah, nope. No,
he doesn't have the Lambo deal like Bond.
Yeah,
Taft,
thank you. Come on, where's the Lambo deal?
He can take Taft's car because he just leaves the car door open.
He left the keys in it. Oh, that's all the keys. I'm old school. He just left all that in there. But yeah, there you go. That's there you go. So Maserati deal for Jerry. I'm happy for Jerry Gibson. Good for him. Usually, when you see a deal like that happens, means like somebody might have been trying to steal him. Coach him.
Yeah.
We see like a deal randomly out of nowhere for a third string guy. You're like, why do they need to do that? Well,
someone got a phone call.
Somebody slid into a DM. You know, that is illegal to, you know, try to poach a guy from a roster, but I think it happens. All right. We got my man Nick Shuley coming up with Setlist ATX. We'll dive into that, let you know where some of these great musical acts coming in town, where they'll be for the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Then we'll dive back into Texas versus Texas A&M. Promise you we'll hear from Steve Sarkisian talking about Marcel Reed. And we got to talk Cowboys. I brought this story up yesterday at the end of our show about Jerry Jones and saying that he might keep Mike McCarthy. I said it was a conversation that was being had by insiders in the NFL. I said that a couple weeks ago. I said they're actually talking about Mike McCarthy could be getting either a contract extension or getting a one-year renewal. And I thought it was crazy, but I was like, it's worth bringing up because people I respect and trust are talking about it. And then a week later, you get Jerry Jones on 105 through the Fan saying, it isn't a crazy idea to think that Mike McCarthy could be coming back to the Cowboys. Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, there's momentum for it right now. We'll discuss it next hour, but also talk some Texans. All that and more right here on the broadcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.